Black Tie, a short work of fiction by Jacob Strunk, translated from The Masculine by Anne Rosenquist Fee. She feels his breath on her before she sees him. Warm, sweet, suffocating, it comes over her in waves, slowly over her like water. She opens her eyes, and as they adjust to the darkness, she can begin to make him out, a small, unmoving form to her right. Her neck hurts, and she sits motionless, letting her iris dilate to let in the small amount of light present. She looks at him again, stares at him, and after a minute picks up the faint movement of his chest, barely discernible in the dim light. Though she knows he is not, she thinks for a moment he may be dead or in that calm stillness between life and death. She'll be careful not to wake him. She stands up carefully, knowing she's in danger of bumping her head on a lantern, which must be hanging somewhere above her. She squints and thinks she makes out the shape of a door straight ahead on the far wall. She stretches her neck and rubs, trying to will away the pain and stiffness. Crickets chirp outside, and she knows before she gets to the door that it is a crisp, cool night, though not entirely uncomfortable. She pushes open the door and steps into the night. Around her, the forest is dark, though not silent. A slight breeze rustles the tops of the tall oak trees. Somewhere behind her, a deer or maybe a raccoon crashes through the underbrush, startled, but just for a moment. The crickets are much louder now, pressing on her, enveloping her, and for a moment she feels calm surrender and wishes to lie down again, to let the night, the blue haze, the dark forest, and the crickets wash over her in their cool symphony. The pain in her neck brings her back, and she takes another step forward. She sees her truck off to her left. The driver's door is open, and a torn blanket hangs out, limply touching the ground, a victim of unspeakable acts left humiliated. In the clearing before her, the house looks sinister, a white face with black eyes staring at her, gaping, a sky without stars. Fear pushes into her head, ink into water, tentacles feeling, clawing for a hold. Then it's gone as quickly as it came. She stretches again and looks up at the stars. It's a clear night, cool and crisp as she knew it would be. It's the kind of autumn night Midwesterners live for, free from heat of an Indian summer and the cold of an early winter. She looks back at the shed behind her, its door agape. She tries to remember who he is, where she got him, but she can't, any more than she can remember how she got back here. She looks down at the black scarf around her neck. There's dirt on it, dried mud, soot. Her blazer is gone, and the sleeves of her white dress shirt are rolled tightly above the elbow. She holds the scarf to her face and strains her eyes in the darkness. Blood. A spot of blood at the bottom of the scarf. In the dark night, it appears as nothing more than a black dot, perhaps even a shadow, but she knows. She knows what it is and has a fair idea of where it came from. She glances back to the shed, then to her clothing. Her dress shoes, below her only good skirt, are also dirty, caked with dried mud, broken twigs stuck in the mud on the heels. She bends down and, licking a thumb, makes a feeble attempt to wipe them clean. Her finger causes a streak, but no more. She'll have to clean and shine them again. She remembers now the reason for her attire and wishes she'd had the foresight to change. How long now has it been? How many hours or days has she spent in a ball on the floor of this woodshed, crumpled next to a faceless man with a bleeding forehead? She imagines not long, though long enough to cause her to curse her lapse in judgment. She should have changed her clothes. Her face contorts as she raises a hand to her forehead, trying to think, trying to remember, to piece together the missing time. She remembers a funeral, remembers the line of visitors, small as it was. She remembers the pastor's remarks and her own tears. She tries to visualize leaving the church but cannot, although she knows she must have left for the graveyard with the others. It's a blur. Fragments of images, old snapshots, as foreign to her as anyone else. The road, the forest, the man. The man. She starts back toward the shed. If she can place him, then she can place herself. Does he know her? More importantly, does she know him? She again curses her memory, her actions of which she cannot make sense, from which she cannot figure out what to do next. Would it be wise to go back into the dark shed like this, without a light, still in her good skirt and shoes? She thinks. Fingers the black scarf and her tightly rolled sleeves. She has nothing to go on. She has left herself no clues. As a favor to herself, an act of forgiveness, she decides against the shed. She turns and heads towards the house, firm in her resolve this time. She has a purpose. She goes around to the back door, entering through the uninsulated entryway tacked onto the back of the house by uncaring builders. It is a cluttered mess of cans, clothing, tools. Her mind turns to her work, and she decides she may as well begin, take advantage of the pleasant night. Rummaging through the mess below her, she pulls out an old oil lantern and, striking a match from her pocket, lights it. In the grimy light, she pushes through the piles at her feet, pulling out what she needs. She sets the necessary instruments on the ground outside the door and notes aloud the frost on the grass. First freeze will be coming soon now. She strips out of her soiled skirt and shoes and slips into comfortable overalls, relishing the loose fit. She pulls the shirt and scarf off and tosses them to the floor, but not before examining the black silk once more. She shakes her head and pulls a blue flannel shirt off a hook. Bending down, she picks up what she placed on the ground and grabs a lantern. She's halfway back to the shed before she realizes what she's forgotten. She curses and neatly sets down the utensils in the grass, then turns back to the house, lantern in hand. If there's one thing she learned from her mother, it's patience, and while she's frustrated that she must make this second trip to the house, she's grateful that she knows exactly where it is. She remembers leaving it there the day before, or was it longer, and heads straight for it. She pushes her way through the back door and straight to the wood stove, and it is there, exactly where she left it. The dull blade has lost its shimmer, but still reflects back some of the light from the dirty oil lantern. It dances in her eyes for a moment, a warm amber prick against the cold blue of her cornea. She smiles, gripping it firmly in her left hand, and heads back out to the shed to begin her work.